We'll call the meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. First up is approval of the minutes. Representative Hoppe moves the minutes of April 23rd, August 29th, October 30th, and February 24th be approved. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Saying none, that motion carries. First up on our agenda is House File 642. Representative Lesch is actually not even here because this is just a Rule 4.20 bill that passed through the committee, was sent out to the House floor, automatically comes back to the committee for us to send it back to the House floor. Why that is, I don't know. I just follow the rules around here. But unless anybody has any questions about how that procedure works,
no.
Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, does it say in the rules that we have to send it back to the floor?
Not necessarily, but did you have another place you'd like to send it, Representative Hoppe?
Well, that's a nice table right over there.
We can do anything with it we want to. Historically, what we've done is we've sent it back to the House floor. So if folks would like to hold on to it till Representative Lesch gets here, all right. Then with that, the chair will move that House File 642 be re-referred back to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. Next up, Representative Schoen's bill is House File 2253 relating to consumer protection. We've got this issue is before us, as members know, on an informational basis today. Representative Schoen's bill was literally just introduced today. It deals with data breaches. Specifically, was brought on, I think, Representative Schoen, by the data breach that Target experienced, affecting some $110 million customers. That is an issue that this committee is very keenly interested in. Because of the need for some background information, we did ask Mr. Bickerstaff from the House staff to provide us a little bit of a chronology or background with respect to the issue, and then we will take up Representative Schoen's bill. I will note that actually when I announced this hearing, I literally was pulling into a parking ramp there's a camera on here now. I'm pulling into a parking ramp. I don't want to show my numbers. And my credit card got declined. Which I've never had that happen before. It was a little bit embarrassing, and I had to give them a different credit card. I called, and sure enough, it was impacted by the Target data breach. That is why they had declined my own credit card. I don't think that had anything to do with the fact that we were holding a hearing with respect to it, but it is reflective of what some 110 million Target customers are going through right now, and that hopefully that's the least of their worries. Because there's also the threat to their credit, there's a threat to their data practice or their data privacy with respect to their financial data. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Bickerstaff to give us a little bit of background on the issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You'll see in your materials a memo that was prepared. I was asked to briefly discuss the timeline of events since the breach in the middle of November of 2013, as well as some of the steps Target's taken publicly and any congressional action that's been taken to date. So if you take a look at the memo, and just to point out, due to the ongoing investigations, a lot of this information has been gathered through secondary sources. This isn't from Target. This is just through my research. From sometime in late November through about the middle of December, it was determined that cyber thieves gained access to information on millions of debit cards and credit cards from Target customers. Initially, it was believed and reported that it was information from roughly 40 million cards. This number was later reported as up to 110 million cards. Among the information that was retrieved was card numbers, personal identification numbers, and email addresses. And it was about 2 weeks ago reported that the cyber thieves gained access with stolen vendor credentials. So they logged onto the Target mainframe and were able to access the point of sale systems that way. The vendor credentials came from a heating and cooling company in somewhere in New England, I believe, a small company. December 18th is the first day that there was a public notice of the breach by an individual who blogs on security and the internet. The same day, American Express confirms that they had knowledge of the breach, and December 19th, Target confirmed that information from 40 million cards had been compromised. Then on December 23rd, Target reported that the data breach was facilitated by malware installed on many of the company's point-of-sale systems, so the cash registers that they use in their stores. When a customer swiped their card, the information was not only stored in the company's computers, but also sent to a remote place that the cyber thieves had access to. On December 27th, Target acknowledged the personal identification numbers to debit cards and credit cards were also exposed. And then on January 3rd of this year, TCF Bank joined a growing list of financial institutions that took a replace them all strategy to the breach and just replacing everybody's cards. So since then, Target's done a few things publicly. First of all, they've offered 12 months of credit monitoring services at no charge. For all individuals, you just go to a website that Target's created and you request an activation number. They'll email it to you, and then you go to Experian and you sign up and you're able to use that service. An executive from Target also testified in front of Congress that they've pushed up their implementation of the smart chip cards that you may have heard about. These are widely used in Europe and they're considered by many industry experts to be far more secure. So those are expected to roll out sometime in early 2015, which requires replacing all of the card swiping machines as well as all of their red cards. It's believed by Target that the cost of pushing this rollout up will be about $100 million, but they've committed to doing that to increase the security of their payment systems. And then as far as congressional response, to date there hasn't been any firm congressional response that I'm aware of. There have been a number of hearings on Capitol Hill, not only for Target, but also for smaller retailers such as Neiman Marcus and Michaels, who also suffered data breaches around the same time frame. One of the issues that advocates are pointing out is that there is no federal law directly on point requiring retailers to notify customers of a data breach within any specific time frame. Generally, this has been left up to state law. There are other industries, such as financial institutions, that have those firm guidelines or standards, but at this time there is no federal law, so one would assume that that's what Congress is considering in holding these hearings, is what type of approach to take there. And I believe that's pretty much it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Begerstaff. Are there questions for Mr. Begerstaff before we take up the bill? Do you have a quick summary of what Minnesota law does with respect to requiring notification?
Sure.
With respect to retailers in particular?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, the bill in front of you deals with, it would amend section 325E.61, which is in the Consumer Protection Statutes. It applies to data warehouses, which is defined as any person or business that conducts business in the state that owns or licenses data that includes personal information and so on. There's no definitive guidance in Minnesota, but other jurisdictions have read owns or licenses data to include retailers who store personal information used to facilitate a transaction as qualifying as one of these businesses or persons. So really what the law currently says is that retailers have to notify individuals within a reasonable time frame. So currently it's left up to the retailer to determine how long they have to notify, and it also includes a provision for an ongoing investigation. If the retailer or law enforcement agency believes that it would be it would hinder a law enforcement investigation, then the retailer can hold off notifying affected individuals.
Okay, thank you. So just so we're clear then, Minnesota law though is not absolutely clear that retailers are covered under 325E?
Correct.
You indicated it's been interpreted.
Correct.
Or some would interpret it that retailers would be required to comply with that statute, which requires notification of a data breach within reasonable time.
Correct.
Okay. And I'm not trying to steal any thunder from your Representative Schoen as much as I just want to make sure that we understand what is existing law versus what you're talking about. Are there other questions for Mr. Biggs? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of questions, and actually I had the same one you did. And just so I understand this, according to current law, would this supersede current law, or if we pass this as is, would they then, if the company's working with law enforcement, there's a chance to catch somebody, is there a way that they could not do this within 48 hours if it would hinder the investigation? Yeah. And that's under current law? And this wouldn't change that? Is that what I understood, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Biggerstaff?
Well, and if you keep keep the question going, because Mr. Biggerstaff's looking it up right now as we speak, so are you able to address that, whether or not it...
I'll help you out. When I was 13, I was shopping, and... But, Mr. Chair, I've got some other questions just a couple of other things, if you want.
Well, yeah, if you could, unless you're ready to address it right now, Mr. Biggerstaff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hoppe, if you look on page 2, line 3, and this is current law, the notification right. required by this section may be delayed to a date certain if a law enforcement agency believes it would hinder their investigation.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that wasn't going to change under this. And then, Mr. Chair, Representative Schoen, or Mr. Biggerstaff, when you go to page 3 under subsection or subdivision 8, line 3.33 is where it starts, retailer breach, the $100 gift card. Do we know what the financial implications would be for Target if this law would have been in effect when this happened?
And actually, Representative Hoppe, this might, since we're now getting into the bill itself, what I wanted to do was make sure that we express what is current law and the chronology which Mr. Biggerstaff walked through.
Well,
I think what we'll do is, it's a good jumping off point to hear from Representative Schoen about the elements of the bill, and then come back and walk through that. Unless okay. There's anything else from Mr. Biggerstaff? All right, thank you. And
to that point,
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then, Mr. Biggerstaff, is that disputable whether or not this applies to retailers? I mean, what is it based on? I guess I missed that part in your presentation. When the chair asked whether retailers were, whether this was applicable to retailers or not, what's that based on, your assessment that it is?
It's a great question. Mr. Biggerstaff?
Mr. Chair and Representative, my interpretation is based on specifically some legislative history that was that accompanied House File 2121, which was the initial passage of this language that's in current law that reads, Minnesota's enactment of House File 2121 requires businesses that possess personal data to notify persons whose personal information has been disclosed to unauthorized persons. So that in this, they also point out that this is based on California's law, which is very close in terms of the language. California was the first state to include this type of law, and California law has been defined to include retailers under the same language.
And Representative Woodard, that just sums up why I'm concerned about whether or not it's clear or not. As Representative Davids, who likes to, sometimes he just goes back to his office and listens to legislative history, the old tapes over and over again of past Commerce Committee meetings. But I don't think it's, based on what Mr. Biggerstaff just said, I don't think it is clear that it applies to retailers or not. That's how it's been interpreted. I appreciate the interpretation. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to apply to future data breaches. Representative Woodard?
And then as a follow-up to that, Mr. Chair, do you know, has it ever been disputed?
Mr. Biggerstaff?
Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard, no. And if it had been, I'm not aware of any time it's been disputed. I think that if it had been, we would have some definitive guidance on it.
Representative Woodard? And thank you. We'll hear from Representative Schoen. I do want, on behalf of Target, was invited to be here. Target did, I believe, what their lawyers probably recommended that they do, which is not make public comments about this. They did refer to the congressional testimony that's been provided. My understanding is that they are now in litigation being sued by like 4 out-of-state banks or something like that. So please don't look badly on our friends at Target. I don't think they feel good about this data breach. If they could be here, I think they would be here. But I'm certain that they've been recommended or advised that probably it's not in their best interest from a legal standpoint. And with that, Representative Schoen, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, to expand upon Mr. Biggerstaff's explanation, what I've tried to reach into is looking at, in the last year, data privacy issues have been huge. I mean, we just looked at our DVS lawsuits that came throughout Minnesota. And that was name, date of birth, address, height, weight, no social security number, no medical records, couldn't get into your bank account. This data breach and others like it, and I don't think that singling out Target alone is the scope here. Really, when we look at the issue, we've had other businesses that have had the same thing. Obviously, right now, this is the biggest one that we have, is that we really do need to focus on consumers' privacy. I got a call at 1:30 in the morning on my cell phone in bed, and it was an automatic call saying that my MasterCard, which is my check card, had been deactivated through suspicious activity. And they wanted my PIN number and other things like that, and obviously I just hung up. And I called my bank the next day, and they said, well, clearly that that wasn't us. And I've never had that before. Now, this is probably one of the largest breaches in history. And again, from all my understanding, especially related to Target, they did everything they could at the time. The IT folks that I have a constituent that relayed to me that Target got this shut down within 18 hours of knowing that it happened. And so I think that's to be applauded. According, that's what the IT folks tell me. That should be celebrated because that was pretty good. However, I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that people know when their data has been breached. In my line of work, I get phone calls about this all the time through identity theft calls and the uproar that it causes in an individual's lives. And the sooner the better that they can get that intercepted. I included the $100 gift card really as a statement to say how serious this issue is when someone has to be when someone has to deal with that in their life, what a serious problem that causes. But mainly it's to encourage some enactment of prevention upon the retailer's part, because we're really trusting them with some of the most private data that you have. And what was explained to me is, now that I have my check card, if they can get the check card information, it went out into this private, or this dark web online marketplace, and all these numbers were there. They were able to go in and do exactly what they did to me and make a phone call somehow and connect information, but they still needed to make other connections, and that's why they were making phone calls to people that had the cards. And get even further, and they could have gotten into my bank account at that point. And that's kind of scary. And then I think Target absolutely did the right thing by offering a one-year credit monitoring service, and I think maybe that's something that we should fortify in statute so that that's a standard piece. So really that's the crux of the legislation, is to encourage folks and businesses to do the right thing. Protect our data, which is terribly important, and move forward as Target is trying to move forward with more encryption, more card protection, and that's absolutely the right thing to do as well, too.
So, Representative Schoen, is the credit monitoring element that you have on page 3, is that not required under current law?
No, it's not required.
Okay. So, to Target's benefit, or to Target's credit, pardon the pun, they did that of their own volition. There's no requirement in Minnesota law currently.
Absolutely. No, that's, I like I said, Target's done a lot of good things, and they're a great Minnesota company. And I'm not here to villainize Target in any way, shape, or form any more than anybody else. I think that they're in a position, and I think that there's rules and regulations set up probably federally, or the credit processing services, but maybe they're just not quite good enough, and maybe not up to the expectations and living up to what we need moving forward.
Okay. Thank you. And we do have a couple other testifiers, but I see we've got a couple questions as well. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Schoen. Basically 3 points. The first point is, I'm a small business owner, and I probably got about 500 clients, I'd guess. And if there's a data breach in my company, I would have to buy $50,000 worth of gift cards for my clients. Is that the way I'm reading this?
Representative Schoen.
So if your clients suffered as a result, if they had a loss that basically, if their data had been breached and they had probably had to deal with some repercussions as a result of it, yeah, you would. If every single one of them did. If that number was the right number.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Schoen, if we're saying that 110 million people, the data was breached at Target, that's $11 billion they would have to pay. Those are job-killing gift cards, the way it sounds to me. The other issue is, Mr. Chairman, Representative Schoen, with the Minsure data breach, would this bill, would your bill apply to them when Minsure had that data breach? Now, I guess it probably wouldn't cost that much because there's nobody signed up through it, but with that being said, would it apply to Minsure also?
Well, just a second, and thank you, Representative Davids, for the question. I think there's 100,000 people now signed up through Minsure. But to the point of the gift cards, I thought I heard you. Maybe I misheard what your testimony was. I thought the gift card piece was just to draw a point to the issue of. But maybe I misunderstood. Representative Schoen?
I certainly think that the gift card piece of this is a flexible portion of the bill. It really is to draw attention to the fact of how serious that data privacy is. And really all we're trying to do is give consumers the confidence to go back to shopping using their credit cards, not only at Target, but you know, bank cards or any other retailers in general.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Representative Schoen, I'm glad to hear it's flexible because I think we should flex it right out of the bill. First of all, and second of all, 100,000 people on Minsure, I think two-thirds of them are on public programs, and we don't know how many there actually are. So I hope we can just make that a non-issue and just get the gift card thing on there, because that would cost me, in my little business, $50,000. And because somebody hacked into my computer beyond my control, and I'm out $50,000. I mean, I'd have to work 2 weeks for that. I mean, that's just wrong.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I apologize that, you know, a good solid 10 business days would be out for you on that issue. But, you know, I looked at that number, again, as an attention getter, but it really leads me back to the DVS data issue. We were looking at, until the judge ruled that it really wasn't private data, that in the federal court, $2,500 an instance of a breach, $2,500, and this was $100. So if you could imagine that all data was treated equal as far as a breach in a number, what would $2,500 do instead of $100?
Sure. And Representative Davids, to your in light of what you do, what do you think of the credit monitoring element or the 48-hour notification?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we're trying to put something in the statute that private business is doing anyways. I mean, the businesses have come up and said, we will do this, we will do the credit monitoring, we will do these things. So I don't really know if we need a bill, because a responsible corporate citizen such as Target has stepped up and said, hey, we got a mess here, let's help fix it, and they've come up with their own ideas. I don't see where this bill really helps anything.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And I, the reason I ask is because my understanding is that there are Target, in to very much to their credit, has done both of these things. They notified folks very quickly, and they've engaged in a year's worth of credit. But my understanding is that there have been other businesses that have not done that. And it's nice that we have this in an informational setting, because maybe we can follow up on that. But I think Target only did it because Target is a good corporate citizen. But for those that might not be as good of a corporate citizen, that aren't notifying or aren't within 48 hours or aren't doing the credit monitoring, that's what I'd have a concern with. And I think
Mr. Chairman,
why the bill is here.
Mr. Chairman, to you and the author of the bill, I see some problems with this bill, but this is a very real problem. And I think it's certainly very legitimate that we are talking about to see if there are things that we can do, because this is really frightening stuff, if you think about it for just a second. And most of us have probably experienced some credit breaches. I know my last one was I had $2,500 extra on my credit card, and it was for buying landscaping items in Massachusetts. And so we just called the company, and they shut her down, and we didn't have to pay it. But that's just little. This stuff can really get nasty. So
I thought you told me it was okay for me to use your credit card, but
should have bought in Minnesota.
Well, I'll tell you, when mine was in jeopardy, you know, as soon as it got declined, and then I called, my first question was, all right, what has been charged on my credit card? And you start to, you know, you obviously start getting concerned not just about what's been charged on it, but the fact that your private financial data is exposed to folks in the Ukraine or wherever this data breach was eventually went back to. So you're right, it's downright scary. Representative Schoen, I think there's a question from the member from Lyon, Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of piggyback a little bit along, I've got a couple questions. So if I was shopping at a Woolworths or a Coast to Coast, would those particular retailer have to give me a gift card to their point of business, or would it just have to be a $100 gift certificate to any place you wanted to go?
Representative Schoen, I know you've kind of hammered on this point.
Representative Swedzinski, I don't think we addressed that specifically. I imagine they could give you a Visa gift card or the Coast to Coast or Woolworths. Mm-hmm. I know you and I have had probably more than one conversation about Woolworths and your fondness of shopping there.
Well,
so.
Yeah. I use those as
Representative Zinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just use those as examples, just because there are, you know, potentially jobs being lost because of some of this with businesses, and obviously we all know who those are in the room. But also kind of, you know, moving any idea what the general cost is to provide, so on an individual basis, so the cost of credit monitoring, what are we estimating those general costs to be to it? You know, so say my data was breached, and what do you suppose that would cost for a year?
Coverage. Representative Schoen, and by the way, folks, we've got two other people that I think might be in a good place to answer some of those questions about credit monitoring and so forth, and I want to make certain that we hear from them because they've traveled a distance to get here. Representative Schoen?
Yeah, that really was going to be, Mr. Chair, the and Representative Swedzinski is really going to depend upon the service provided. I think there's a gamut of numbers that and how intense or how... whatever the monitoring service is, it could be $20 a year or $100 a year. There's various amounts, so I'm not sure exactly which one Target in specific is offering.
Okay.
I'd imagine they've got a bulk buying deal.
Okay. And I think what we're you have all right. We're going to go to one more member, then we're going to take some testimony, and then I've got still other people on the list. So up next, Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess to you or to Representative Schoen or somebody maybe that could answer this, but I know that you can buy insurance for a lot of different things, but are we seeing companies buying insurance to basically insure against data breaches? And that may be one of the things that becomes an outcome of this, is that the company, Target, whoever, may have to go in and purchase insurance to insure against the costs requirements to go and compensate consumers who have had negative financial impacts as a result of the negligence on their part. You know, maybe negligence isn't the right word, but just as a result of some of their action. And just wondering if somebody has a comment or can answer that.
Actually, that might be a great jumping off point for our next testifier, because we've got folks here from the Retailers Association as well as from the Bankers Association. And my understanding is that, in fact, there is insurance that will cover for this, but our friends from the retailers or bankers may have a little bit better sense for that. Next up is Bruce Newstead from the Minnesota Retailers Association. And you've heard some of the questions that have popped up. If it's possible for you to address those in your testimony, that'd be great.
I think in my testimony I'll address a few of those, although there are some items, as Representative Schoen pointed out, that are negotiated contractually, so it'd be difficult. Credit monitoring as a pricing, as an example, would be difficult to figure out at this table how much that might cost a company. It'll depend on the size of the contract and the negotiator. So,
now, just because I introduced you, you still have to,
absolutely,
because we talked about Representative Davids likes to go back to his office and listen to all this over and over. If you could just identify yourself for the record.
Chairman Atkins, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bruce Newstead. I'm the staff president of the Minnesota Retailers Association. We represent about 1,500 retail stores across the state from all different sizes, from Minnesota's family-owned retailers to shops and organizations that service customers across the country. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to comment on, especially on the first day of session, on this important matter relating to Minnesota's statutory requirements on data breach. 780,000 jobs across Minnesota depend on retail. Now, those are jobs in our communities, and they depend on the viability of retailers. And core to that viability, as we've talked about today, is trust and confidence between the retailer and the consumer. Recent criminal acts have impacted that confidence and trust. However, no one's more motivated to fix that and regain and maintain that trust with customers than retailers themselves. But as we've talked about here today, retailers are not alone in this battle. Other industries are not immune to similar attacks. Financial institutions, education systems, online businesses, small businesses, even state and federal agencies are impacted and have suffered from data breach. While the legislation before you today is mainly focused on retailers, This very complex and critical issue requires shared responsibility among many key stakeholders and industries. The Retailers Association is ready to partner with other organizations to help address this key and important issue. Some legislative changes may be necessary, but we have strong concerns with the proposals mentioned here today, and I'd like to outline just a few of those very briefly. As context, Minnesota has one of the strongest data breaches statutes in the country. Our current statute requires notification when personal information is believed to be obtained by an unauthorized person. Under the statute, the notice must be delivered within a reasonable period of time, consistent with an investigation of the breach and related law enforcement activities, and our statute defines the means of delivering that notice to customers already. While our current statute provides for consumer notification, it generally leaves rebuilding the consumer confidence up to the retailer, who we really believe is best positioned to define what actions should be taken and when working with customers. The proposal before the committee today takes decisions on remedies to provide to the consumers out of the hands of retailers, and it fails to recognize size and operating models in today's retail community. One significant change under the proposal, as we've talked about, is the individual impact relative to the 48-hour notice when the breach of unencrypted personal information occurs. Unfortunately, a mandated reporting time fails to recognize the nuances of an individual data breach, such as the time it takes to investigate the breach, the time required to repair any issues before exposing those vulnerabilities to the public, and the time needed to address and prepare for customer concerns. In the case of a data breach, it's already in the retailer's best interest to notify its customers and its partners in a timely and responsible manner, and the existing statute provides appropriate direction to retailers in the event of a data breach. In addition, the statute already establishes a legal expectation of timeliness, with the Attorney General vested in the responsibility for enforcement of that. When a breach occurs, retailers are motivated to be responsive to customers and make things right. One of the proposed changes that the retailer or wholesaler is that they provide a $100 gift card in the case of somebody being impacted by the breach. The requirement is inconsistent with the idea that a retailer will act in the best interest of rebuilding those relationships, and mandating to payment to individuals in the form of a $100 gift card fails to recognize the various retail business models we have today. The discriminatory nature of that requirement is also troubling, as breaches clearly do not only impact retailers and wholesalers. Also, requiring a business to provide a payment to a customer automatically assumes that the customer has been damaged, and that may simply not be true. And while mandating the issuance of a $100 gift card to individuals might sound straightforward, most retailers from small to large will incur great expense in processing and the distribution. Retailers who have an email list, a simple email list of customers that has been compromised, could easily be put out of business by such a requirement. Another proposed remedy in the data breach bill is mandated credit monitoring. Current law provides actually for notification of consumer reporting agencies in the case where 500 or more customers are impacted by a breach. Requiring credit monitoring for each individual impacted may not be warranted depending on the specifics surrounding the breach. Unencrypted information does not always contain data that could lead to fraud, under which case credit monitoring may not be necessary or mandatory for a retailer to provide. The last proposed change in the statute establishes a retailer's responsibility to pay individual fees and charges relating to a breach. Current law and practice provides protection to consumers today in the event of credit or debit fraud, as you sir pointed out. Today, many of those protections are put in place as a result of contracts between businesses, card networks, processors, issuers, and consumers. In essence, today we have a system of shared responsibility relative to addressing consumer costs and fees in the event of fraud. One final quick observation on the proposal. The changes in the bill, as I mentioned earlier, are a little dismissive of the different types of business models we have in retail today. Consider the language of the bill, which says an individual or person establishing that as the person responsible for reacting to the breach. That could be the person who lives next door to you that does in-home type sales retail work. That could be a family that sells Girl Scout cookies. It could be your favorite restaurant in your community. It could be a downtown shop that sells antiques, or a hardware retailer, or even your barber. Not to mention, it could be a car dealership. It could be many of the retailers that serve multiple communities, and it could be a nationwide retailer. These proposed changes simply don't recognize the fact that there's different business models in retail today. The proposed changes don't fit in each of those retail segments with each of the business models and in each scenario in which a data breach might occur. When customer data is stolen, we recognize that it's a retailer's best interest to remedy that with their customers. It's in their best interest to communicate that and take important steps to engage customers and rebuild trust. My organization certainly recognizes the deep need to discuss this issue and understand it. Many industries share the responsibility for dealing with data breaches and data protection, and my organization hopes that the committee takes more of a holistic approach to that conversation. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I'd certainly stand for any questions.
And thank you, Mr. Newstead, for taking the time to join us. Did you hear as you were coming down, Representative Falk had a question about insurance?
Yeah.
Whether or not insurance covers it, if you happen to know.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative, that'd be a great question actually for an insurance agent. I do know firsthand from the organization that I operate, you know, we have rider options relative to data and data security, and so there are insurance options available, and I couldn't speak specifically to what those cover. I think some retailers do maintain that type of coverage, but I couldn't comment on to what level or to what degree.
Okay, and that's, again, the nice thing about doing this in an informational setting is that we don't plan on acting on this bill today. We'll gather more information. In fact, on that, to that point, and I know the gift card, you raised that issue. I think Representative Schoen indicated that was to sort of highlight the cost of this to consumers and others. But as far as potential remedies, have you happened to see what there's members of Congress that have also introduced legislation. Do you have enough familiarity with the proposals there? Or if not today, would you be willing to provide us some follow-up about what you think of those ideas? Because I imagine that those ideas will likely emerge here in Minnesota as well, and we'd sure love to have the retailers' input.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, certainly a great point of conversation. The issue is immense and complicated because you look at, you know, what are the systems you can use to prevent fraud, and then what are the systems you can use to address fraud, and bringing those together. And that's more than just data breach. It's more than just card technology, as you've pointed out. There's a lot of things that go into that, I think. At the federal level, they're having the conversation right now. There's a group that's come together representing banks and retailers, 20-some-odd organizations. Former Governor Pawlenty is the head of one of those groups, having the conversation about how do we address this issue and what does it look like. And I think state-level groups, including mine, certainly look forward to being part of that conversation. It is a big conversation and a big issue, no doubt about it.
Thank you, Mr. Newstead.
You're
and
welcome,
I'm not going to say that there won't be questions for you, but we've got one final testifier from the Minnesota Bankers Association, and I want to make sure that we hear from Ms. Rice as well. And then what we'll do is we'll open it up for questions from members and see where it goes. So thanks again, Mr. Newstead.
Thank you.
Ms. Rice, welcome back. It's good to see you again. I wish it was on a different topic than something this serious and scary, but thank you for coming.
You're welcome. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Tess Rice. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent about 400 banks, or 96% of the banks across Minnesota, from the largest to the very smallest. We were asked to come here today just to provide some general comments about data breach rather than to comment specifically on the bill. For banks, the protection of customer information is a huge deal. We invest heavily in systems. You know, when you get those calls and they know someone's used your card, we've all gotten those calls. They know someone in a different state is buying something and they call you. There are systems in place to know when fraud is occurring. Federal law requires us to reimburse customers for losses. So anytime you have a data breach like this Target data breach, whether it's a debit card that was used or a credit card, federal law says that consumer is not going to be liable for any unauthorized transactions. There are time limits for reporting, like 60 days, for example, for a debit card. But as long as you let your bank know within that time period, you would have no losses in that kind of situation. Of course, that's extremely expensive for banks, and it is paid for with the charges that come on through the payment system. We're allowed up to 21 cents per transaction, and some of that is used to pay for these kind of fraud losses that we experience. I don't have any numbers for Minnesota banks right now. I mean, we've heard that it will be in the hundreds of millions as far as losses projected for banks in this situation.
Ms. Rice, is that just for Minnesota? I know the credit unions just issued a report in the last couple of days about the impact just on Minnesota credit unions was $750,000 in costs to the credit unions and their members. Do you have a sense of the magnitude of the cost just for Minnesota banks, or are you talking across the country?
Mr. Chair, I was speaking across the country because we don't have Minnesota data. I think the credit union numbers were just for the replacement of cards. To replace a card is between $12 and $15. So the credit union's number doesn't take into account any fraud losses that they might need to absorb, so we would expect that number to be substantially higher. With 110 million potential cards needing to be replaced, I'm not very good at math, but it's, you know, it's a lot of money, and that's just the card replacement. That doesn't address the actual fraud losses. We sometimes get reimbursed in a major data breach like this, like the TJ Maxx data breach. There was a lawsuit, and banks got a small fraction back of the losses that they experienced in a settlement. So sometimes some money flows back to financial institutions. Every bank responds to these things differently. There are federal rules in place that dictate how we respond to breaches, but banks are allowed to set their own policies. And so there will be some banks, for example, that would have replaced every card in this target situation. So they would have gone and looked at every customer that used a card at a target during that window of time and replaced every single card. There are some bankers that do that because they're going to end up liable for the losses, and so they just wanted to do that out front. There are some that are waiting to see if those numbers would actually be compromised. The bank will be liable in any case, so it's just a risk management decision that they make. So you will see banks handling them differently. Many times consumers are now requesting a new card, and banks are certainly reissuing in that instance. But certainly this most recent data breach has brought to light the importance of security in the system, in the payment system. I mean, the integrity of that information is absolutely crucial. And what we'd like to see is some national standards to address this issue, just because this payment system is really used internationally. And so we're looking for some sort of a solution that kind of evens out the responsibilities here, because in the end, banks are paying for the losses. Of course, retailers will have expenses, but the actual fraud losses that occur are going to be borne by financial institutions. And so there isn't a lot of incentive for retailers to do things like, let's say, take your driver's license as well as your debit card to make sure you are the person who's on that card, because they're not the ones that need to pay for those losses. So we're looking for some federal solutions where the responsibility is shared a little bit more.
And thank you, Ms. Rice. So if I, just to make sure that I heard you correctly, let's, if just less than 1%, a million of those customers are here in Minnesota, of the 110 million that were subject to the breach, and it's $12 to $15 per card to replace, is that what you said?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So just for the card replacement, the impact on Minnesota might be $12 to $15 million in losses for Minnesota banks and credit unions? Is that, if I did my math right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Wow. And that doesn't include any fraud. If there's actually fraud that takes place, that would be on top of the $12 to $15 million just to replace the cards.
Yes, that's correct.
So, all right. Thank you. We do have some questions. I'm not certain who all these questions are for, so Mr. Newstead hopefully is still here as well. But Representative Anderson, Hoppe, Woodward, Loon, and Zellers. Representative Anderson, and thank you for your patience, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have two questions. They're for Representative Schoen. In the bill, actually existing language on page 3, and if you look at subdivision 6, we have remedies and enforcement in place. We give the authority to the Attorney General to do any remedies or enforcement that they need to. So my question to you is, do you feel that the Attorney General has not been responding appropriately to these breaches, and is this why you're bringing this bill forward?
Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I absolutely believe that the Attorney General does her job quite well. However, I think that it's certainly worthy to have a discussion about whether this should be codified in a statute in a specific manner, and that's really what I brought this forward to do.
Well, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schoen, but it looks like we already have a remedy in place when we have the Attorney General has the ability to do some enforcement there anyway. But You know, I think what's interesting to me and what Mr. Newstead pointed out, we've got a lot of small businesses that will be hit by this that don't really have the wherewithal to, you know, combat this. I saw a program here just this last week from national experts that say, you know, even the big companies can't compete with these cyber criminals that are out there. The technology for us just doesn't, I mean, it's just not up to par. So it kind of feels like we're punishing businesses for something that's really out of their control. And, you know, I think of small businesses like Hovey's Diner or maybe the Mermaid's Car Wash or maybe even Gerton's Garden Center. All of those folks are going to be hit with this fee, and that could put them out of business, and as a result, people are going to be out of a job. And I don't know, I think I'd be more upset about being out of a job than I would anything else. But on top of that, Representative Schoen, what I think is kind of rich for us is the fact that here we're going to put this onus on businesses, but we have here a case where Minsure, as Representative David's pointed out, put out Social Security numbers, names, addresses of 1,500 brokers in the month of September, and nothing has been done about it. Are those brokers going to get a $100 gift card for that? Or how about, you know, this doesn't take into account any of the government-owned municipals, all the munis that the cities have out there. They're not covered under this, but certainly they're a target for cyber criminals as well. So we're saying it's okay for the private sector, but we as a public sector, we shouldn't have to be bound by the same rules and regulations.
Representative Schoen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson. I think that just highlights the absolute necessity for an even playing field for data privacy and restoring consumer confidence. And, you know, it really, when you look at this, you know, you're pitting business against business, because when we talk about 110 million victims and you do that math and we're just replacing the cards across the board. Now, I'm not sure I got this right, because I will assure you math was not my expertise. But I just pulled out this dandy iPad and hit the calculator. I think that was $132 billion to do those replacements in the cards. And maybe, Mr. Biggerstaff, you could do the math for me and confirm it. But
we've got our new fiscal guy here, so we might put him to, Mr. Savory might put him to work on doing the math to figure out the impact. But
and Representative Anderson, I understand your concern with that. You know, when we're not looking to hurt any businesses, but the fact remains that data privacy is a big issue, and it shouldn't be any more or any less important as it relates to government as it does to private business.
Thank you. Representative Hoppe?
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair.
I looked over there, I saw the empty chair. Really. Representative Hoppe.
So, Davids, we'll be back. At least we think so. I had some of the same questions for, I guess, Representative Schoen or whoever that Representative Anderson did. I mean, we have a couple of the biggest retailers in the country that are headquartered here, and it's a big deal, and we've talked a lot about the big retailers and the data breach at Target, but I was wondering a couple of things. One, what if you have somebody who's like Cooper's grocery store? He's got three or four grocery stores, and you get a lot of customers that come through a grocery store. If he's got a data breach, or somebody like Haskell's or Von Hansen's, who have 8 or 9 or 10 locations, you get one data breach, and everybody that goes there, whether they're impacted or not, is going to get a $100 gift card. That's out of business for these people, unless we mandate that they buy insurance. Not that the government would ever do that. One other question. We said, and we talked a little bit about municipal liquor stores, and I don't know if anybody ever answered it, but it's any person or business that conducts business in the state. Do we know, does that apply to municipal liquor stores?
Is that for Mr. Biggerstaff, or?
Sure.
To the extent you know off the top of your head?
Well, I would assume it does, but I don't know legally if they're exempt under some other statute.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, I don't know off the top of my head. I think that highlights some of the, you know, vagueness of this definition.
Okay, and then
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final thing, and I'll skip the rest of the questions. But if we pass this, what do we think the implications would be for grocery store chains? You know, we just announced that there's a new grocery store chain that's going to be expanding farther north. What are the implications for them, future national chain restaurants or retailers that might want to come to Minnesota? I think this is going to have an impact on whether they want to come or not.
Are you and if I might, Representative Hoppe, are you talking with respect to the credit monitoring or the notification?
I think everybody's going to do, especially bigger businesses, I think it's reasonable that they're going to do credit monitoring, maybe out of the goodness of their heart, or they're good corporate citizens, or maybe just to, you know, be loyal to their customers. But I think the $100 gift card is the one that's going to, the flag that's going to catch people's attention.
Well, and I would too, but I think Representative Schoen has said a number of times now that that was to highlight the and dramatize the sort of significant impact. And I get where folks are going, but, you know, we can keep trotting over that ground again. Representative Woodward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I think this question is from Mr. Biggerstaff. So as we were talking about municipal liquor stores, do you know, is that VFW's Legion Halls as well? I mean, they're obviously not a government entity, but they would be considered a retail operation as well. Even what about school bookstores? Would they be considered under that definition as well?
Mr. Biggerstaff?
Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard, based on the discussion that we had earlier in terms of the interpretation of this language from other states, yes, they would.
Okay.
Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then also the definition of a data breach. I know in my experience in the investigations world in the private sector that, you know, you could have an occasion where a cashier has gone bad, has gone rogue, and has decided to take some data from individuals as well. So that monitoring would have to occur at that level as well, and notification to that extent. I mean, what is the definition of a data breach?
Is that for, are you directing that to somebody? Or do you just want me to answer?
Would you mind, Mr. Chair?
Actually, I think Mr. Biggerstaff might be best prepared to say he can look into it further. Mr. Biggerstaff?
Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard, breach of the security system is defined in current language on page 2, starting on line 6. And I think it's important to note, just from your example, the notification is triggered when the business learns of the data breach. So in the instance where I think you said a teller takes some information, it wouldn't be until the business was informed of or became aware of the breach that the notification requirement is triggered.
Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Biggerstaff. This one I think is for Representative Schoen, but have you talked to law enforcement? And you mentioned that you had a neighbor that was NIT, a target that you talked to, or a constituent that was at Target. Have you talked to them or anybody else, SuperValue, anybody who has an investigations team that looks at this, about the feasibility of 30 days from the breach? Because, as you know, as an investigator, sometimes it does take a lot longer to figure out exactly what has happened. And I know that a couple of letters here talk about, you know, unnecessarily getting people riled up over this, and in fact could even be the boy that cried wolf. Because you hear so often from your retailer that you have a potential breach that it becomes completely meaningless. So have you talked to those groups to kind of figure out whether that's a reasonable amount of time, reasonable expectation?
And Representative Schoen, is that, I'm not trying to coach you, but is that what we were talking about earlier with line 2.3 through 2.5 on the impeding a criminal? So you don't, they're allowed to not notify immediately if it would impede a criminal, and maybe I'll talk to the cop here. You want a Representative Schoen to that question?
Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard, so I'd go back to your instance just related to the, let's say a cashier grabs a card in my business, that would be the perfect scenario because now we can tie it back to somebody, and that's probably the one of the most difficult ones to prevent, maybe, because they can simply, I mean, you have to trust human beings that are working for you at some level, right? You know, this is obviously a different kind of breach. Now, on the feasibility, you know, I think once they know, I don't think that it should be too unfeasible, if you will, to let people know that this happened. And working with, and Target, in particular, as you know, has one of the best investigative groups that exist in the country as far as I'm concerned, because we've worked in conjunction with them. They do a phenomenal, like, it's called Target in Blue. They have an amazing investigative division, and they do great things. No, I haven't got the specific answer on their corporate opinion as to what feasible is, but I think that we've had some written testimony that they don't, not necessarily Target, but others don't necessarily think that this is in their opinion, overly feasible because it's burdensome upon them. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Woodard, anything else?
Yeah, just one more question, Mr. Chair. And so I would agree it's overly burdensome. but it says, just as a clarification, it does say in the bill that they must be notified within 48 hours of any breach. And as you know, as an investigator, you might have that cashier, going back to the cashier example, could have been doing that for months. And so automatically you are in violation of that because you weren't actually aware of it. The breach occurred 48 hours prior. So maybe just a clarification on that particular part, and that's section 1.23.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Woodard and Mr. Biggerstaff also touched on this earlier, that it's once the employer actually knows about it. So quite frankly, if I got called by Representative Anderson because I was a police officer in her jurisdiction, and she let me know that there were some funny charges and didn't quite figure it out, and that somehow we made that connection, it's still not, that's between the officer or the investigative department and Representative Anderson. So once the business finds out, whether it's through the police or it's through their own internal investigation, it could have been going on for 4 months. I think last year, we had an issue with some other businesses, national chains, that these type of data breaches went on. It lasted for 4 months, but they still wouldn't be obligated to make notification until the end of the 4 months when they said, oh, well, we found out about it now. So it wouldn't be that they were in violation for 4 months. It would be if they waited 2 weeks after having knowledge of the breach, then, yeah, by a long shot, they would be in violation of that 48-hour rule.
Yeah, one more.
Based
right?
on that,
Representative Woodard.
I was going to let it go, but so under the credit monitoring requirement, though, right? It talks about this service must be available to the individual within 30 days of the breach, and they may not have the ability for to ask that question of Mr. Biggerstaff because the law is pretty clear. The bill is pretty clear that it's within 30 days of the breach. So is this a language problem that you got to work on, or is it? You know, I just don't see where that is within the bill. I get that you don't think it is, and that Mr. Biggerstaff doesn't think it is, but it's right there. So, you know, is this something you're willing to clean up, or is it something we just have to deal with in the courts?
Representative Mr. Stone? Chair, Representative Woodard, as pointed out early on, the data privacy is a big issue, whether it's corporate in the private sector, in the government sector. And of course, by all means, if we move forward with this, cleaning that language up would be absolutely something that would be amenable to do.
Thank you, Representative Woodard.
Thank you.
We've got two final people, and then we're finished up. Representative Loon, and then Representative Zellers. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schoen. Just a couple of quick questions, and I'll try to make this brief. Just with regards to in the last page of your bill, page 4, about the repayment of fees and things that may fall under that, we had some discussion, and I don't know if the representative from the Bankers Association wanted to comment about this, but just also as a consumer, one of the questions I had, I had a credit card that I have that just took it upon themselves to issue me a new credit card. I didn't ask for one, but it was one of a question I was asking in the wake of some of this activity, if that's something we should do. Would, you know, if a consumer has decides to get a different credit card and those fees, the annual fees are higher, is that something that would fall under this that would be now the retailer's responsibility? And then just overall, I mean, is the replacement of the credit card with something different? How... what is the effectiveness of that in terms of providing protections to the consumer?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
Representative Lewin, if I could clarify, are you making the assertion that you're getting a different card physically, or it kind of sounded like maybe you were talking about switching credit card companies as a whole?
Representative Lewin.
Mr. Chair, actually I'm wondering about either instance. If the credit card company decides to change the type of credit card and there's a different fee structure, what happens then? Or if the consumer decides they're going to do some research and they're switching and and the plan that they choose has a higher annual fee, would those kind of things, is that what you would be considered any charge or fee as a consequence of the breach?
Representative Schoen?
Mr. Chair and Representative Lewin, I guess I don't believe my intent was that if you decided to switch credit card companies as a whole to someone that had a different annual percentage rate, that this would be that particular coverage. However, if there was some sort of fee incurred because of the breach, maybe you had your gym membership tied to your credit card, and that breach, and it got shut down, and they decided to levy a charge to you because it didn't go through, then that, in my mind, would be completely different as far as that really. That might be the type of fee that would relate to.
Representative Lund?
Thank you. And just if Ms. Rice, if she had any comments about sort of the replacement of cards and how that plays into additional consumer protection in an instance of a breach.
Ms. Rice.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bloom, replacing a debit card, for example, is very effective in that there's no longer any connection back to your account. Of course, if information has got to them, such as your Social Security number and your address and your name, identity theft is a likely scenario, but the replacement of the card would at least protect that account. Same on the credit card account sign.
And Representative Loon, you got any further follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, again, I think some of the questions that have been raised are important. We went through a lot with regards to, municipal services and that. I know I personally pay my water bill to my city on my credit card. It's a setup system. So there's just probably more instances than we could come up with here in a few minutes in this committee about what could be affected. So I hope those will all be considered as we look at this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Zellers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for Representative Schoen. So if I missed it, my apologies, but the municipal question, the government entity's question, so are they covered by the bill or not?
Representative Schoen?
Yeah, Chair Atkins and Representative Zellers, I go back to where we were at with Mr. Biggerstaff, and he said that was his understanding, if I remember correctly.
That they are not?
Well, that they
Mr.
are.
Biggerstaff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zellers, I think that this, again, highlights some of the confusion because we're relying on defining this based on how it's been defined in other jurisdictions. If that was what a court decided in Minnesota, then they would be covered because they're a company that stores your personal information for the purposes of completing a transaction, which is the language that's been cited favorably in Minnesota.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the author, good thing you're still in warm-up phase because that's a big one that I'd get defined real fast. I mean, if it's not, it's no offense, but kind of a BS bill. I mean, there's a lot of people that are looking at our private data that are in government that are a heck of a lot faster and looser with it than private businesses, and if you're going to exempt them or they're not going to be covered under your bill, you're a good cop. That makes you kind of a compromised cop. You know, that's not the whole idea behind this. And I get your bill, and I understand the part on the last page where the fees, and I say this with all due respect to any of the folks in the room, they're going to be data breach reimburse any individual incurs charges or other fees. What I see this happening is those of us who pay our bills who end up going to a bank are going to pay the fee for everybody else who's stealing from us. And I get and I understand the bank and the retailer's position on this, but by the looks of your bill, especially if the your negotiating position of gift cards ends up being bounced from the bill, so to speak, that helps, but it still doesn't end the problem of we're going to end up paying for it all. And maybe that's the whole point of the bill is we're paying for it anyway, so this puts it in law. But if you're not going to cover government agencies, it's a pretty sad bill.
Representative Schoen, any response to that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Representative Zellers, I think I've stated it once or twice already that government or private industry, it needs to be an even playing field. And I absolutely agree that any breach of data, breach of privacy is a big deal. We were faced with $2,500 a breach when it came to the DVS lawsuits. And that was name, date of birth, home address, height, weight, eye color, not Social Security number, no access to your bank account, no access to your health records, no access to a lot of information which allow you to open up credit card information. But yet it was a big deal, and it is a big deal. But this is the kind of thing that really can wreck people's lives, and I think it's a worthwhile conversation to find out what our corporate partner is going to do moving forward, because we have a lot of expectations out of our own government as well, and rightly so. There's no excuse for bad actors in any provision, government or private industry.
And actually, on takeaway on that, if there is a single item on which that we benefit from this discussion today, both Representative Zellers hit on it, Mr. Biggerstaff hit on it, Representative Schoen hit on it, is we have these protections written into statute that nobody seems to know for sure to whom they apply. We think they apply, and I appreciate Mr. Biggerstaff's interpretation and his reference to here's how it's applied and here's how it's defined in California. But I'm not one that really likes to rely on California law to figure out how to make things work here in Minnesota. So just a huge takeaway from this hearing is that there probably ought to be a little bit of cleanup in terms of to whom these protections apply, rather than just relying on what they do in California. Representative Tice, you get the last question, make it a dandy, and then we're going to let people cut loose a little early today. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schoen. I guess I have a lot of concerns about the bill for many reasons. Number one, as a credit card holder, I know the risks that are involved with it. And yes, I was a shopper at Target in that time frame, and my bank notified me that I was a shopper that was affected and I would be receiving new cards. A credit card company did the same, and I received new cards. I feel that that's a risk I take whenever I use my charge card. My data is up for grabs, and it has been. I have received several phone calls from different companies. One of the cards called me up and wanted to make sure that indeed I was in Panama booking flights to India. I wasn't. And my account was shut down immediately. So as a consumer, I feel confident that those safeguards are already there. They're looking out for my accounts. I've also had an instance where my son has a home in Orlando. We go there quite a bit. But at this time, somebody had charged. It was like $3 at a CVS. And they wanted to know if indeed that was me. And it wasn't. And that was one of the things that people who get your card numbers will do to see if they go through. So they charge a little amount. And they were on it immediately. So I never received any charges or issues. Everything was replaced immediately. I look at what happened at Target, and as a consumer, I'm very confident that they took care of me because, you know, they did other things to get the business too, because not only is this costing everybody money replacing cards, but it also affected their reputation. And I thought they went above and beyond. And I think what we have in place does that. When I see instances of having the $100 cards, that is just really hitting them when they're down. I mean, Target is a big Minnesota company, and now we're going to say, then you got to give them a $100 card. They did a 10% deal. They worked their buns off to get people to shop, especially during the Christmas season. So I really look at something like this as being very damaging to a company who's already having issues. And I do believe that as soon as they found out, they weren't working 9 to 5. They were working 24/7 to figure out what was going on and who was affected. But I think when I look at things like the credit card, and we're talking about the municipal liquor stores and stuff, is there a fiscal note attached to this?
I knew there was going to be a question there somewhere, Representative Tice. Representative Schoen, I'll let you answer the question. This is also your chance for a final word on the bill, and then we're going to adjourn for the afternoon. Representative Schoen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Tice, there's no fiscal note attached to this now. It's an informational hearing. You know, we had a great discussion, and I think that some of your points are valid. You know, the bottom line is it needs to be an even playing field. We've had to work really hard in the state of Minnesota to restore consumer confidence amongst the state. The DVS website has been revamped as well to offer some explanations. When I log on to that as a police officer, I have to do a lot of different things in relation to that than I did a year ago. And that was a direct result of problems that were highlighted. And the same thing needs to happen in this industry as well, too, is that I'm glad that we had the folks here to have a good conversation, good questions from and input from both sides, and I think it's the right thing to do, and I'm glad that we had the conversation highlighting concerns of either the businesses or the data breaches on behalf of the citizens of Minnesota, and I look forward to working together to restore confidence in our businesses and data privacy for our citizens.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Schoen. We stand adjourned.